welcome everyone. In the instance that our text, the chairperson of the committee has been replaced with a new chairperson, we officially need to elect a new chairperson. But for that, we need to have a quorum. A committee constitutes 14 members of the committee. And in this instance, our committee has basically lost two members. One of our members has been appointed a house chairperson, which makes our members of our committee 13. Ms. Hajish. Yeah, our members of our committee are 13, so it means we need 7 members to form a quorum to elect a new chairperson. Yeah, so in that instance, I will proceed with the election of the chairperson of the committee. Can I just go through the process first? I will call for nominations for the election of the new chairperson, and a seconder, and objection. In the absence of no objections, then the nominee would become the chairperson of the committee. May I recognize any nominee? Dr. Koronov.
Chairperson, I want to nominate Mr. Peter Maluleka as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises.
Mr. Maluleka has been nominated as the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Any seconder? Ms. Bowman, seconding the nomination. May I ask for any further nominees? Mr. Nana?
No, Chairperson, I wanted to assure you that there are no further nominations.
Okay, in the absence of no nominees, I didn't ask for objections. But in the absence of any nominee, Mr. Maduleke is officially the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
Okay, what we'll do now then is I will ask members to introduce themselves, and thereafter we'll have SAFCO introducing themselves, or the delegation from SAFCO, and then we start with our meeting. Thank you. This is okay.
I'm Gloria Borman, member of the committee. I'm Connie September, a member of this committee.
Gerard Kuru, member of the committee.
Jake Dikobo, member of the committee.
Lindy Nana, member of the committee. Ndwabandu Machoba, member of the committee.
Peter van der Halen, also a member of this committee.
My name is Nopana Lomagunshu, I'm the new chairperson of SAFCO.
Good morning, I'm Kovic Brett, I'm the CEO of SAFCO.
Morning, my name is Leslie Dimeri, senior executive at SAFCO.
My name is Sam from Department of Public Enterprises.
Morning, Tracy Washer from Department of Public Enterprises on the financial side.
Morning, Kangweni Ndo, also from the Department of Public Enterprises. Thank you.
Caroline Richardson, DP.
I think there are other people here as well, and staff members from our side as well. Let me introduce themselves because I don't know everybody. We'll start with you. I'll introduce yourself.
Isan Mutlumi, the committee secretary.
Eric Boskati, presenter for the committee.
Nandanda Lwala, from committee assistant.
Loretta Lawrence, PA to the chairperson.
My name is Fungi Wekula. I'm the secretary for the study group, Public Enterprise.
Without any further waste of time. And let me congratulate the chair. You said you are new. I'm also new. So let me congratulate you and wish you well during your term. Yeah. You may then present your report.
Okay. Based on the case that I'm new in the committee, and this is the review of 2009-2010, I will not be presenting today, but I will ask the Chief Executive Officer to present the annual report to the committee, if the Chair agrees. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Perhaps just as introduction, which you made, the comment that you're not familiar with the company itself, we in forestry, and specifically commercial forestry, so we grow trees commercially. When we look at where we get our mandate from, I will briefly introduce the company a little bit more for you there. My presentation outline today would be just to look at the group structure, what it looks like, to see where we get our mandate from, then to take the committee through the financials and some of the salient features of the annual report, not in too much detail. And then, if you allow me just to look at the road ahead, where we're going with the company into the future. The group structure, reporting to the Minister of Public Enterprises as a Shell representative, because we are 100% government owned. The group structure looks complex, but it's actually fairly simple. Safcol being the holding company of Kumatiland, 100% ownership in Kumatiland, and most of the operations except for the Mozambican operations is done through Kumatiland, also a company in its own right. It was originally created as one of the five packages that was presented for sale in Safcol. The Shannon properties that you'll see there in the middle of this structure is properties that we are renting out. Previously it was to Mondi, but they have sold their rights to a company called Riatele, and we've ceded that. That property is under land claim, 100% of that property is under land claim, and we and the board have agreed that we will dispose of it in terms of that process. So once government have finalized the process, that should be sold. Then we have Ifloma, which is a company in which we have 80% shares in Mozambique. The other 20% belongs to the Mozambican government. It is not a big company. We operate currently around about 10,000 hectares that's planted, with a potential of it being 17,000 hectares. compared to the South African operations of 125,000 hectares plus 123,000 hectares planted. So it's not that big. And then a couple of smaller companies. The other very important one is Kamslabani Timber Pty Limited, which is down in KwaZulu-Natal, which is our research or seed orchard for the future of the company. That's very important. Chair, we've been established in terms of an act that was passed in 1992. So the company was established in September 1992 with the objective of the development in the long term of the South African forest industry and the optimizing of its assets according to accepted commercial management practices and conservation principles. So what happened was on the 1st of April 1993, we took over all the commercially viable plantations from the then Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. They were all bought by this company and paid through the issue of shares. The SAFCO board established a vision for us. This is a vision that was only worded in some 2 years ago after the company was, it was decided not to proceed with the privatization process. So the board told management that the vision for them, for this company, is that it should be a world-class global business engaged in multifunctional forestry. And that's the important part, and you will see as we go along what we've done with regard to that. Revolutionizing the integration of forest and communities. Also, a very important new aspect to the business to say that we must interact with our communities, surrounding communities. In terms of the report for the year, the governance part of it, the board was properly constituted. There were 8 meetings scheduled. Plus a working session. The working session is mainly on the strategic direction of the company, and all those meetings were properly attended by the directors. There were 9 non-executive and also independent. They were all 9 independent directors and 1 executive director being the CEO. During the course of that financial year, we did not have a CFO, but the CFO had been subsequently appointed as the executive director to the board. So with the newly appointed chairperson, we also have a newly appointed financial director to the board. The committees, the board had 4 committees, the Remuneration Committee, a Transformation Committee, an Audit and Risk Committee, and a Financial Committee, and those committees also met during the course of the year and advised the board on special items. The new board was appointed 28 September 2010. In terms of continuity, there's 1 NED that will also serve on the previous board, and then myself. So there's 2 directors that served on the previous board, and that's also now part of the current board. And the annual financial statements received an unqualified audit opinion. It's also important just to briefly look at what the history of the company, the fact that it was in the late 1990s, it was decided to privatize SAFCOAL through 5 of its subsidiaries. Now, 4 of those have been sold, privatized, being the Eastern Cape North, where we sold the shares to Sangisi Forest, KwaZulu-Natal, where the shares were sold to a consortium, a Siatkobeka consortium, represented by Mondi. I didn't say the first one, the majority shareholder there is Hans Marinsky. And then the Eastern Cape South, where the Amatola Forestry Company was sold to a local company, Amatola Re, it's a family-owned business. And the Southern and Western Cape, where there were originally 2 packages that were combined into 1, and that was sold to a company, a consortium in the Western Cape. Now, the policy, government's policy decision in respect of the disposal of the remaining shareholders are still being awaited, and that's being finalized by the department. As you would see that all of those companies have, we still have a minority shareholding in them, between 16% and 25%. The one that we have 25% in is the KwaZulu-Natal one, where the original 9% shareholding that was earmarked for ESOP, employee share option scheme, the not realized due to the fact that the majority company with a majority shareholding decided that they will outsource the most of the work done in that company, and therefore the employees reduced to such an extent that it didn't make sense to have an employee shareholder scheme there. Then on the Sasol side, the privatization of the company was placed on hold, and a decision is being considered by government on that, in that regard. We had formal compact signed by the shareholder representative and the board for the year that we're currently looking at, as well as for the current year in which we are. So the formal shareholder compact that was signed. In terms of the shareholder compact, the first item, strategic intent element that we had to consider was the short and long-term financial and commercial sustainability of the company. And the committee will also see, this was the first year that the company that was not profitable, so we also had to face all the realities with regard to the international economic downturn. And in terms of the financial return, the target set of 10%, we did not achieve that. The actual return before the fair value adjustment was 18.5% negative. In terms of creditworthiness, in other words, of the financial position of the company, our ability to serve our debt, that was still fine. We were not geared at all, except for very small loans through the purchase of assets, and we still had a cash ratio in excess of 1% target set. It was in actual fact 1.7. In terms of the sustainable forestry management, the commercial forestry aspect of the company is very important to make sure that you monitor it and that asset stripping doesn't take place. So one of the key elements that we've been monitored on by the board as well as by our shareholder representative is to look and make sure that we do replant the areas that we clear fell. The total area stocked was 124,000 hectares in South Africa, with the potential of another 16,000 hectares in Mozambique, and that's where the actual of 140,000 hectares come from in the actual report. In terms of soil log management objectives, and I also just perhaps for the purpose of those members that's new, our main product that we produce is softwood soil logs, which is then sawn by sawmills, and it mainly goes into construction, roof trusses, and solid wood. So in solid wood timber, different from what the Sappis and the Mondis, where they are mainly pulpwood producers. In terms of our certification, we subscribe to FSC, which is the International Certification of Forestry Activities, and we are 100% certified in South Africa, but in the Mozambican operations we're not yet certified, and we're working on that. There's a target set for March 2012 to be also FEC certified there. In terms of our transformation, one of the key aspects is the enhancement of the developmental contribution of this company. So we created enterprise development activities. Three enterprise development opportunities were identified. One small, or SMME, was created, and five as small medium enterprises in terms of forestry activities, so we achieved our target there. The volume sold into the market uncommitted. The company, when we originally started the company, had a lot of long-term contracts that was allocated to certain sawmillers. Over the past 10 years, we phased them out with a view to have more of the volumes available in the open market. There we've achieved 58% of the volumes, and as from the 1st of April next year, except for pulpwood that is committed to Sappi, all the volumes will be sold on an open market basis. Social compact, and I'll also touch on that later in the presentation again, where we enter into contacts with community groupings surrounding our operations. The target there was that we should at least have six signed compact, and that we financial performance highlights for this year, it's actually a bit of a low light where we've made a loss of 469 million rand for the year. That's after the fair value adjustment. In total, or before the fair value adjustment, apologies. Loss for the year mainly contributable to the fact that we have not achieved our sales targets. The sales for the year were a lot lower than previously. If you compare it in terms of turnover for the previous years, if you exclude 2006, which was a very short year, the government asked us, or the department asked us, to change our year end to align with government's 31st March year end date, so it's a 9-month year end. You'll see that the turnover typically in the region of 700, 800 million came down to 400 million, 432 million. The financial position of the company was still very strong, as I outlined previously. The total asset base was 3.2 billion, with current assets 615 million, and non-current liabilities of 843 million. Cash flow, very important, obviously, to the company. We proud ourselves that we have never asked government for any funding of this operation, and we intend to keep it that way. But the cash flow position over the past 2 years were negative, and you'll see the reduction in the cash on hand available to the company from 2008, 433 million. 226 million at the end of this financial year that we're reporting on. A very abnormal thing in forestry companies, actually in agricultural companies, the accountants require us to revalue the assets. So the fair value of our biological assets are being determined annually. And in 2009, you'll see that there was an increase in fair value adjustment of 758 million. There's various variables in that calculation, of which sales price and an estimate of sales price going forward, as well as a discount rate being used. And due to the economic downturn and the fact that the demand for our product was low, the price is also adjusted accordingly, and you will see there that a negative adjustment took place in the past year, 342 million rand, of which the majority, 390 million, is due to the reduced sales prices. We use a discounted cash flow model as a company in terms of reporting. We've always reported in terms of a discounted cash flow model. Therefore, it's comparable with previous years. The Kumasi land asset contributes 95% plus of the fair value adjustment, so the Mozambican operations have a very low impact on our fair value adjustment. And then, as I noted, the fair value is the big impact there is of prices during the past year. If we look at our business model, the typical business model for any successful company, the three pillars of return to shareholders, our customer value and our people value, we've incorporated in our business plan to make sure that all of them is addressed. But then we also added, in terms of the balanced scorecard, the fourth leg being the community value. We operate mainly in rural, very poor areas. So we went through a process in the past 4 years whereby we identify all the communities that impact on our, dependent on our operations. So we made sure that we also accommodate them in our business model, and we're looking at creating community value as well through job creation, community wealth growth, that's the economic part of it, social and educational growth, and then in general community satisfaction, to make sure that we have happy community surrounding our operation. In terms of our social economic development, economic development initiative during the past year, perhaps just to show the committee members some of those that we've done, and I would like Leslie also to assist here in going through them. Leslie, let's have it. Just first of all, what is the social compact? It is a court that we sign with a community clusters. Originally, we thought that we will sign it with individual communities, but what we did decide is that we will rather have groupings whereby communities, traditional authorities, local authorities are all included in a interested group cluster, and then we sign a compact with them whereby we, in a structured way, make sure that we interact with those communities, understand their needs, how they impact on our business, and work together for a better solution for both of us. Leslie could perhaps just take us through the activities for the past year.
I think in the year that we are reviewing, we managed, as you have seen in the previous slide, to sign compacts with six different communities. Signing compacts meaning that we entered into an agreement to do social community development within those communities on the basis of the needs that the communities identify. And the next slide I'm going to show you is just a few projects that we have engaged in. Most of the projects, or most of the expenditure of the $6.6 million went into infrastructural projects, where we targeted mostly the early childhood development projects, victim centers, and certain schools that we were within the community grouping. As you can see, some of the projects before they got finished, some of the projects already finished and handed over. This is one of the science laboratory that was built in one of the schools in Mpumalanga area. And these two, the first top one is the ECD Center, Early Childhood Learning Development Center, which is linked to a particular school and registered with the Department of Education. The bottom one is the ICT Center. And this one, the three pictures here is basically the Victim Care Center, which most of them are linked with either the police or social health welfare, that they required victim centers to can be able to look after the victims in the communities. This was basically one of the sports fields that we established in Mpumalanga, and what is very good about this is that even the school itself had a drive towards sports, and they were winning trophies in the area, and they were very well motivated. They even after our implementation of this sporting field, they raised funds themselves to put another coat on the sporting field so that it doesn't get wear and tear, and they're looking after their property very well. We also get engaged a lot in putting up computer centers both for schools and for the communities, as identified through the social compact, and we ensure that the computer center becomes more of an integrated process where we get partners who can also supply with software, and we also put messages from our own organization regarding taking care of the forest, loving the trees, and preventing forest fire. We also get engaged in assisting them with establishment of libraries and so forth. So there are very few projects that we have been engaged in the previous financial year and for the communities, and I think that's all for me.
Thanks, Leslie. Just as Leslie explained, just to give the committee some feel of where the expenditure is going, mainly into infrastructure development, into the early childhood development centres, into IT centres, etc., classrooms. So by far the majority is going to that. We do it, all of our ACD initiatives we do in conjunction with the local authorities and the central government to make sure that it's sustainable. Operations going forward. So we will not, for instance, do an early childhood development center without making sure that there's teachers appointed to look after the children. In terms of enterprise development, it's still new. We're still working on that. But we have started a honey project, a beekeeping project up north. Small at this stage, but we hope to roll it out going forward. And to make sure that we have honey production capacity, that because we know that a lot of honey in South Africa is being imported currently. Then We also, in terms of forestry contractors, we have developed quite a number of contractors to assist us in our core operations. And as you can see there, we have created 256 jobs. And we're currently one of the main focuses of our enterprise development section is our timber frame housing project, whereby we hope to be able to, in South Africa, also participate in affordable housing through timber frame housing. What we have done is we've built, with the assistance of the DBSA, one house down in Gromboja. And it's actually based on a house, the plan for a house, but it is for a daycare centre for the local community. And we hope that we can roll this concept out going forward. Then we're also looking at projects going forward. Green Energy is using the biomass within the company that normally is linked to a sawmill, where you then produce energy and heat for the sawmill, as well as putting it back into the infrastructure, the excess energy being created. There's charcoal opportunities producing charcoal that we're looking at. I mean, the timber frame housing, as I've already mentioned. Transformation initiatives. Internally, we created certain transformation forums. We're looking at all six of the seven pillars of the forestry charter. The one that we're not actively pursuing is the one on ownership, because we're a state identity. So all six other pillars we are looking at actively, making sure that we are leaders in the forestry charter implementation project. We also have vendor days, whereby we invite all our suppliers and potential suppliers, and we make sure that we do educational days there for them to see how they can set up and improve their business as well. Transformation buses, where we take people along to see what we're doing in terms of socio-economic development. There you can see some of the activities that we're doing. We also go and do in the community surrounding our operations. We actively assist them in maintenance of some of the buildings. That is basically in terms of the report itself, just highlights there. We thought, Chair, with your permission, just to look at the future very briefly. I know it's not normally, but we thought it's important just to highlight the road ahead, because the company is currently not sustainably sustainable into the future in terms of its financial performance. So we are still, as I'm talking, we're experiencing losses. The production is still very much lower than the capacity created within the company. We should normally produce anything between 1.4 and 1.6 million cubic meters of sawlogs. We hope that we'll be able to sell 1.2, maybe 1.25 million cubic meters sawlogs this year. So we need to look at the company, how we're going to turn around the company. The negative cash flow, we have managed to reduce that a lot. The negative cash flow for the first 6 months was around about 35 million, and we even expect it to become positive in the next 2 months, but it's still not a sustainable basis for us to take the company forward. So we've engaged in a full business process review to look at all the activities within the company, to see where we can improve our efficiencies and effectiveness within the company, and also to see if there's not areas that we should have new business activities in terms of vertical integration. Also, a very important decision that we need to take is on the SLOMA operations, to see where we're going to take it forward in terms of expansion or in terms of selling off the shareholding that we have in that company. Land management and the land claims itself, the progress is very slow there. It impacts on our business on a daily basis, whereby 61% of the land that we operate on has land claims on it, and it's lodged by, those land claims are lodged by 29 different claiming groups. So what we're doing is we, with working very closely with the department or the Land Claims Commissioners, as well as DAP, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, who is the custodian of the land. We only operate in terms of a licensing agreement on that land, to see if we cannot resolve the land claim going forward as soon as possible. But it does take long. It's a very tedious process. In terms of the shareholder compact that we signed for the year that we're currently in, the key strategies, first of all, is financial and commercial sustainability. Linked to that is the sustainable forest management. And we've agreed that we will restructure the company to restore shareholder value and to make sure that the integrated forestry value chain operations throughout the company and our operations. Secondly, to enhance development contribution, our role as a state entity in the developmental state, we need to address that. So we're addressing economic transformation, rural development and afforestation, specifically expansions where we could assist in rehabilitating the Category D plantations. So we're in discussions with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries in that regard as well. Key risks and challenges for us going forward. Natural disasters, we will always be subject to natural disasters, fires being the most important one that we need to ensure that we are ready in the fires to protect our assets. But then also drought and wind impacts on our operation, windfalls. The Sirex, which is a little wasp that attacks pine trees, especially if it's under distress. It will come and it will lay its eggs and larvae in the tree, and the tree will die over time. It's currently not impacting that much in our operations. It's limited to our plantation in KwaZulu-Natal currently. But it came from the Cape and it's moving up north, so it's something that we're monitoring very closely. And Fusarium is a root fungi that attacks the tree, and the tree actually dies from that, so we need to look at that. A major issue for us is baboons, with the natural enemies being leopards reducing so much, we have major baboon damage to the extent of millions of rand annually in our operations. So there's a protocol call that we signed whereby we can reduce the baboon population in our plantations. Then the other activities, mining activities and environmental pressures, that we have to reduce our property or planted areas in the past 5 years or so. We've reduced, I think, up to 10,000 hectares there, plus minus, due to those activities. Land security, I addressed the land claimants and the community expectations in our surrounding areas. Is something that we need to address. Going forward, if we want to grow the business very closely with the board, we have to consider the gearing of the company and the balance sheet, which is in a low-margin industry, is high risk, so we need to carefully consider that. And the slower than we originally anticipated economic recovery, especially with regard to residential housing construction, will continue to impact negatively on our business. Thanks, Jay. That's the presentation that we prepared for the committee.
Thanks, Tom. Is there anything that your colleagues would like to?
Just to summarize, we started in our new position as a new board in November. We were appointed in September. We had our board induction on the 1st of November. So we had since had a board meeting on the 11th of November. Yeah. And we've been engaging with the department as well. We've met the new minister of public enterprises. And I think the main issues around SAFCO is clearly that the business is in trouble. We want to meet on the 6th of December to review the turnaround plan that management is currently developing. We need to have serious engagement with the department to understand, again, going forward, the target intent, which is part of the issues that we will need to review, is whether what we do with Komati land, my understanding at the moment is that the government is moving away from privatization. So we would like to have to confirm with the department. We're waiting for a response from the minister on the strategy going forward. We also need to engage the department on the minority shareholding that is still having the four packages that are sold on how we're going to move forward with that. And the minister confirmed that he'll be talking with National Treasury with the minister to understand how we're going to move forward. So the department, maybe they have the information or they can ask on how we're going to move forward on that and how we're going to do with the minority shareholding. With the issue of land claims, we will be deliberating again on the 6th of December whether there's an opportunity to expand our developmental role and take into account the land claimants as partners of our subcourt in those areas. We will also be reviewing the vertical integration proposal from management. It was recently identified by the department around competition competition, and we'll look into those risks and whether how they will be addressed if we move forward with the contractation, and then we'll be presenting whatever the outcome of the session to the department for further preparation. We also need to make a decision on Islamo, whether we continue in that with that investment or we disengage, or if we continue in what form or shape that the investment will take and that operation will take from the Mozambican government. So in summary, we are engaging with the department. We are working closely with management to understand the issues and also to look into the turnaround plan. And we do understand that the company is going through difficulties. And we hope that by the end of February, when we submit the corporate plan, we'll have strategies that are very strong to turn around the organization to profitability. Okay. Thank you.
Okay,
not from outside. What we're going to do is the amount of
raise points of clarity, questions, or just engage the report. Honorable Coroner, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the management team of Safcourt for a good presentation and taking the committee through not only your achievements but also the challenges. And the Chairperson of the Board, I think you summed that up quite well at the end, the way forward. And I didn't want to use the strong language you used, but the impression is it is a business in trouble. So I'm going to ask the questions based on that. First of all, the land claims. If you say the 60% of the land, state land leased is affected by land claims, on page 35, you awaiting the KLS disposal model is critical on page 36. I think what you correctly say is this is a massive problem for SAFCO, the land claims, unsettled. I counted page 59, you've got 35 claims, of which only three have been settled. And even in the three settled claim cases, it was not settled in full. The communities have not received the double deeds or any form of compensation. Not going into the claims under research, gazetted, under negotiations. So I just want to make the statement, I think you have a massive, massive problem. My first question is, how far have you discussed with DPE or the ministry to solve this issue of the land claims? It flows to my second question. You have a 5-year corporate strategy, and if I hear correctly, the chairperson of the board says this corporate strategy will be produced in February 2011. Now, will you address the exit, Safcourt exit forestry altogether? Is that part of your strategy when you go to DPE? If so, when will it be? And then the question to DPE, when they haven't made any comments, what is the strategy regarding the total exit of Safcourt from the industry? I, it's an outstanding matter. It was a cabinet decision in the late 1990s. It was another cabinet decision in 2006 to postpone, put on hold the exit strategy. So I need to ask both SAFCO, the chair of the board and the CEO, as well as the DPE, what is the position regarding the exit strategy from the industry of SAFCO? My last question, on page 42, your net asset value, and you've alluded to this, it doesn't make a good picture, and you were honest with us to say to us the net asset value is declining. Return on asset, ROA, before tax, have decreased from 21.8% to minus 15.4%. But then also on the similar page, you say that, I just confirm what the chairperson of the board says, the company is in crisis. But then you make the statement that 2011 will be the most challenging year the group has ever faced. Now, why does management believe 2011 will be the most challenging year? And will the net asset value and the return on assets decline further in 2011, next year? And what is the extent of this decline that I think you are predicting? These questions, Chairperson, all link up to one another, starting with your land claimant problem, flowing into your corporate five-year strategy, and looking at your financial position, net asset value, on the graph on page 42, that makes it a company in crisis. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, and equally thank you for the presentation. The chair, it will probably be correct for this committee to extend a word of thanks to the previous chair, Gugu Moloi, and express probably our gratitude for the term that she has had there. I know Gugu extremely well. Chair, I want to start off by saying that in 1999, this parliament heard the following. And maybe you can assist us in saying, from 1999 to date, what is it that has changed and how you have been able to address those things? Because just listening to the presentation today, it seems to be the same thing that are being faced by SAFCO. You said that time that you don't know the outcome of the restructuring and quite a bit of uncertainty around that. You were not sure if SAFCO was going to continue. You also spoke about your profitability, and I think of concern, obviously, your downstream people, your sawmills, there was quite a bit of difficulty there. There was the ongoing rationalization, and then, of course, the problem of affirmative action also. But equally so, you had difficulties with imports and exports. And as we sit here now in 2010 with trade imbalances in the country, to what extent does it still continue to hamper SAFCO? I would imagine that this might be one of your difficulties that you are also facing. You were still looking at your full benefit of the investments in the certificate that you spoke about earlier on, the forestry stewardship certification. But you equally had depressed prices on your logs. So if you can assist us, because I hear you on the finances, but you know, if the entire realm of your in which you are moving seems to be still the same, then what is it that you can say to us in this committee needs to change drastically? And if I may, Chair, I think we must be honest to say that we must end the uncertainty for SAFCO. There's no entity. We've seen what happened to Eskom and uncertainty. there's no entity, no any business that can survive under the cloud of uncertainty. And uncertainty was in relation to the future of the sector, the entity itself, and its people that are there. And so I'm not going to make an excuse for your losses and so on, but I think that your losses must have an impact, the uncertainty must have an impact in you moving forward. So, Chair, I would say that maybe that's one of the things that this committee must really pursue further. I don't think we can pursue it with the Department of Public Enterprises only. I think we must pursue it with the Department of many names, agriculture and all sorts of whatever, fishery or whatever. so many things in there. I think we must use that, because if we link back to who are they, they're in the forestry sector, and the forestry sector goes back to agriculture and all that has a bigger say. Their link with public enterprises is because they are an entity. Where does their policy derive from? From DPE? I don't know. I heard it. Thank you that people are shaking their heads. It derives from agriculture, and we should consider in future chair to have agriculture also in, you know, when they appear before Parliament, for the following reasons, Chair. We should have them because we should know what is the policy objectives moving forward for SAFCO. I heard something, but I'm not hearing sufficiently that the policy that they are pursuing in taking the sector or the entity forward would be the following. I don't think that SAFCO is an entity that's not important. I think they are very important, and they are important for the following reasons. We need to have a water conservation project in this country that SAFCO is quite strategic to take care of also, for obvious reasons. Cape Town is going dry yet again, bit by bit. Forestry is one of those sectors, entities, that assist biodiversity and also the water resources in this country that has got a very, very bad, South Africa is a very dry country. So for that reason, Chair, but economically too, they are important because many of our very, very rural people rely on forestry. That's their livelihood. And so I think there's a case to be made to say, stop the uncertainty. Can we find out what the policies are moving forward for them? But can we also find out the forestry action plan? Where is it? What's happening to it? As long as you don't have a forestry action plan, you will have them. You will have them sitting under the cloud of uncertainty. And as I end of chair, equally so, the forestry, the charter. Where is this charter at? Is it still is it still a draft? Is there anything, can you make it with DTI's, it's finalized, you know, all that stuff that DTI has put forward. Are you going to make it in that? Let me end there, Chair, in saying I would ask that one of the things that the committee must do is address itself to the bigger macro picture of the sector and what it's going to tick for this entity moving forward, because it can't just be about, you know, are the rands and cents working? It's not a rands and cents here only. It's much more, in my view. I might be wrong. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me say I'm so glad that you never asked for money for government. It's a very good sign. But that you are in trouble, that's another issue. So who says in the future that you won't be coming to ask for money? So, and another thing, there are some contradictions that I think are contradictions, especially with a fair value adjustment to buy biological assets. You say on the one hand, when you cut off the trees, you replant it. On the other hand, you say the plantation size has shrunk by 10,000 hectares. You know, we know all those trees are very important for the to take the CO2 out of the air and to freshen up the air again. And now you tell us that environmental pressures are causing you to shrink the business. You say you look out that you don't asset strip, but to me it looks like it is happening. Although you say it's not. Because to me, you should plant more trees than what you take out and leave a legacy behind for a business that is growing. The adjustment of about 1 billion rand, it's the 700 that you would usually make in a year, or upward adjustment, or the 700 million that it is usually valued at now, it's valued at minus 342 million rand. It's quite a big difference. So maybe you can explain that a little better for me. I need to understand that. Is it just a book loss? I don't know. Please explain that a little better. And then I would like to know if you have legacy issues without the land claimants. It's like Eskom is selling electricity for 25 years at below the cost. Do you have these long-term contracts that you must honor and you can't get out of them? I would like to know that. And then the other question is a little more of a sticky one. And that is, in 2007, Mr. Breert, your salary package was about 3 million rand. In 2008, it was 7.8 million. In 2009 was 4.7 million, and in 2010 it was 2,002.9 million. That means in the last 4 years you've earned about 18 million rand, but it's decreased now to 2.9 million, which is, you know, from up there to down here. I would like to know, can you come by with so little money? It looks like your salary is going down all the time. And although in the previous book year you have said, one of the explanations that you earned that 7.8 million in 2008 was a settlement package for 3.9 million, and if you look on the bottom it says, in respect of employment agreement to remuneration benefits negotiated on similar basis as severance packages offered during privatization. Now we haven't privatized. So are you going to give that money back? I mean, it's quite a lot of money, 3.9 million rand that you got for the privatization, if I read it right, and we never privatized. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I did also notice that the no director received any increase in remuneration during this particular financial year. So we commend you for that, and rightly so in view of what is going on. I think my first word must be a word of congratulations to the new chairperson. You obviously are taking over in quite a difficult time. I want to just continue to where the Honourable September left off, and that is one of my questions also was to have been on this the status of privatisation transactions, your slide that you showed us, and although we were talking here about 2001 and then the remaining percentages that still need to have to be decided upon, and the question is related to that government's policy decision related to this. It seems to me that goes way back, and I think too that we do need to be dealing with that, and perhaps that is something that this committee can be pushing for. I think delays don't help us very much in running businesses, because in what happens here, I think, is the staffing and the people on the ground that eventually get affected. And from your report in what
so far. But I would imagine that going forward, it is something that certainly, you know, you must be looking at. And so, and then the other thing that is of concern with the trouble that you're in, you do give the assurance about litigation and claims and so on, that you are covered whether you win or whether you lose. You know, you are covered with that. Now, some of that is quite substantial, and I'm wondering, since this report was written, whether in fact you still stand by that when you're talking about the launch law or something or other for 3.2 billion rand, you know, whether we can. I want to just, though, go to the your board meetings. Whilst you do talk about satisfactory attendance, I do notice that in your board meetings there are, you've got a member with a 40% attendance, you've got two with 70% attendance. And then when you go to your committee, and particularly the one on audit and risk management, and these committees are not made up of great numbers of people. I look at the one on the 11th of June, for example, and out of five people, you only had two present. So, you know, I think one would like to understand what reasons people give you for that. And I notice also that even the past chairperson missed a couple of meetings. So perhaps we could have some clarity on that. I think I have covered and don't want to repeat what has. Oh, I just want to ask, yes, the Eflomo project in Mozambique, those 600 odd people working that you talk about, are those Mozambicans, they locals that employed, or do we take people in and employ them there? Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. Oh, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm happy that my colleagues have asked the more difficult questions that I thought I would have. But I'm looking at the situation where Safcol has minority shareholding and with the intention of disposing of some of those shares. And as they were explaining, they were who bought this or who bought that, they mentioned something called Amatol and said it's a family-owned business, I guess, some of those that bought the shares. Would it be possible for us to know what family this is that bought this share? But also, I'm trying to understand the rationale here, because my understanding is that if you sell these shares in this, it means you are reducing. Now, you have a target of 124 hectares, and then you realize 140. So I'm just trying to, because for me it looks like we are dealing with a company that is declining, is disposing of that, but somehow you are targeting growth. I sense some kind of a contradiction there. The other one, on your targets, I just want some explanation of one of the targets. Maybe there is something I'm missing. You say by 31st March 2012, you have 100%, and I see achievement of 0%. Firstly, I want to understand what target is that, and how do you explain the fact that there's been no movement towards meeting the target. Mm-hmm. I also, firstly, Chairperson, I know that it looks like it's mostly you are saying KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga. There is a name that strikes me as being from Limpopo. Lebubu Care Center. If I may just know, where is that? Maybe one could visit it one of these days. And then maybe in simple English, do you want to address the committee on how you are going to reduce the baboons?
Well, thanks, Chairperson.
Chairperson, may I firstly congratulate the new chairperson for your appointment. Your face looked familiar, I must have seen you before.
I'm not sure that it's a good thing or a bad
thing. It's off the record. Chairperson, the first one on the structure of SAFCOM, to me it seems like a British company. If you look at top management to middle management, about 62 of them are white people, and 51 of those are white males. This is between top and middle management. You will then have 33 being Africans, 20 being males, and 13 being females. I don't even want to go to colors and Indians, sir, because the impression created is that they are non-existent. They are absolutely non-existent in South Korea. But what makes me wonder even further is that a bulk of the employees who are either semi-skilled or unskilled at all are all African, and you hardly find white semi-skilled or unskilled employees at SAFCOM. And to me, an impression is being created that transformation is not taken seriously at SAFCOM. I see they've got Mr. T.J. Demon as the chairperson of the Transformation Committee. I want to put it to you, Ms. Makwenju, I don't think he's doing a good job. To me, this is a very sorry state of mind. It's absolutely unacceptable, chairperson, and probably when we reconvene sometime next year, I will move a formal proposal that SAFCOM should come back with a clear plan as to how they are going to address this. The second one, chairperson, is in page 30. Page 10 of the annual report talks about bursaries. I see lots of those bursaries would go to their employees. It's either bursary or study assistance. But there is a second table just below the first one. It's absolutely confusing because I would have really wanted to see a table which looks similar to the one above, that these are the bursaries allocated for non-employees. This is the kind of, these are the kind of areas, and these are the people that we, this is the number of people who are non-employees that we have allocated bursaries to, and this is the kind of field of study they are currently engaged in. To me, Chairperson, the second table is absolutely confusing. If I could get further clarity about what exactly does that table mean. The third one, Chairperson, is I say in page 64, you have a whole list of service providers. You have PricewaterhouseCoopers as external auditors. You have, I can't even pronounce this, Terrio Greeno Business Assurance Consultants as your internal service providers. I'm worried about the cost factor here. Why would you have, and also KPMG, as internal audit service providers, why would you have your audit committee, which to me would be playing a similar role as those two companies that are performing your internal audit service. Why would you still have to contract two more companies to perform such a function, whilst in fact you have your internal audit committee and still you have your external auditors? And lastly, Chair, it's not something which is in the annual report. I am from the Eastern Cape, in Alice, Amatole area. There are a number of forests in my area, which would be Balfour, Hawksburg, Amatole Mountain Range, and I know it has been a cry in our area. You have Rance Timbers, you have Shank in Melanie, both their trucks are damaging the road, and no one seems to be really caring about the maintenance of the road, particularly in your Hawksburg Road and also Balfour Road. Both of these road chapters, and I'm raising it because they are critically important in the tourism of our area. Hawksburg and Balfour are both on the mountainous areas, and both of them have got hotels and your golf estate. People find it very difficult to drive to those areas these days because of the bad state of the road, largely caused by these trucks.
Thank you.
Quite enough questions. No, I don't have questions. <I'm learning. laughs>
Thanks, Jay.
You may come.
See, I'm going to try and go through them because there's many questions, but I didn't get all of them in detail. So please, if the members could assist me, just to clarify if I miss any of them. And obviously our chairperson and head of senior executive corporate communication was also assist because he specifically, Leslie, is in charge of the land claims assistance that we're giving. So the first one in terms of the land claims and the issues surrounding it, I would like him to clarify where we are with that.
I'm not sure if I fully got the question regarding the land claims. I wonder if the Honourable raised the question, want to just Dr. Kuranov, I think, if you could just highlight that one for me, please. Thank you.
Chairperson,
do you want us to break for about 3 minutes or so? Let's take it 5 minutes so that you will get yourself together and you can respond to the question. May I just add something to this selling or privatization? Just the advantages of it. That's what I was supposed to say. Or do we just want to close Bafna? Completely.
Because of the employment, employees, and the legal claim, board attendance, salary, and
thanks, Jay. On the Flomos site, we started, we're just going to go through the easy ones first and then the ones in more detail. On the Floma, by far the majority are Mozambican citizens. No, it's easy to answer. Good. It's not a complicated answer. Sorry. There's only four expatriates deployed at the Floma, so by far the majority are Mozambican citizens. The board attendants, I'll have to go back and have a look at what the details are, especially with regard to only two board members attending one of the subcommittee meetings. It's too long ago, I can't explain. The individual that didn't attend that many board members meetings last year, she works on a full-time basis for the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and I know that she had to go overseas quite often that year. So it wasn't a trend from the past, it was an exceptional year for her specifically. Other than that, it was satisfactory. It was not outstanding, but it's satisfactory.
Yeah, I think if one looks at the whole board attendance, we had about scheduled about 8 meetings scheduled, plus 2 ad hoc meetings, including the AGM. So it precisely means almost every month there was a meeting, and the overall attendance was, if summed up, except for the one board member was having low attendance, it was almost 70% plus. So I think in overall the board attendance was 36%.
Okay.
The victim care center has been through our interactions with the police in the area and the community, and they identified that it's a project that they need. It's in the Livubu area. We can provide the honourable member with full details of exactly where it is, or even the GPS reading if it's required through the company secretariat, for in case they want to visit. We can also arrange for a visit. I think it would be good for us to have also members in the constitution to see the deliverables of the group as well.
The family business,
Jay, that links to a previous question as well, the privatization of the Amatola package. It went through a normal formal process, and the successful purchaser was the Randstad Group. So they bought it. They had to engage with an empowerment partner with a minimum of 10%, and that they've done. So they complied with the rules of privatization, and the package was then sold to them. It's a very small package. It's actually only three plantations, small plantations that we sold to them, as well as the Stadtrein pole treating plant.
We'll come back to the advantages of this privatization when we deal with the exit facility, if you have a question. And then the targets,
Yeah, the certification 0% achievement in Infloma, it works in a different setup. You cannot get 20% or 30% or 50%. You're either 0% certified or 100% certified. So the process and the targets are up to 2012, and the process is really an interrogative process. You need to do a lot of EIAs and set up things in place, and once that is done, then you can request the independent body to come and do the certification. So you will not get 0% or 8%. You can only have 0 or 100% certified. So at this stage, we're not certified. That's why it's 0% at this stage.
Jay, in terms of legal claims, I can't remember the word that was used. It's recovered for it. The issue is that the claims, we're contesting it and or opposing those claims. The biggest claim is with regard to a previous privatization process where SAFCOL as well as the Minister for Public Enterprises have been, the claim is against both parties, and the 3.2 billion is the damages that the specific organization feel that they've incurred not being approached to be part of the negotiations. So it is a technical thing, and we're still confident.
as issues? Are there any contracts like Eskom contracts?
In terms of long-term contracts, the final long-term contract in terms of softwood saw logs will end 31st March next year. Then there will be no long-term contracts left. But over time, we did change the contracts, the details in the contracts to make it more commercially relevant. In terms of the pulpwood contract, we have a contract with Sappi up to July next year, and then that contract will end as well. And then we will have to enter into new arrangements with all sawmillers and pulpwood mills.
What was the effect of those contracts?
How now I can see why it was. Originally, the contracts were considered to be entitlement of timber to those sawmills, but we have changed it in the 90s, so it was much more on a commercial basis. So in terms of impact on the business itself, and the negative impact, there wasn't a major impact in the years that we're looking at currently. The details with regard to the remuneration of the CEO, the bonus or the settlement that was paid was in terms of an arrangement that was made with the executive directors at the time when government decided to sell Kumatiland and close down Safcoal, and it was a retention strategy of the board at the time. And as it was noted, it was based on similar arrangement that was made with the rest of the organization. What then happened was the transaction didn't go through, the Bonnier transaction. And the new board then decided, instead of continuing with the liability, to settle that with the two individuals, being the CEO and the CFO at the time. In terms of the reduction in remuneration that is based on bonuses and the fact that the company didn't make a profit last year, I had an arrangement, or I said that I will not for a year take my bonus, but rather defer it, so that's why no bonus has been paid last year in the financial statements.
The baboon have been a problem in the past 4 or 5 years, and it's increasing, and the damage is substantial at this stage. What the industry has done, we have formed a baboon working group, and in that industry working group, we've got in the group also the authorities, including inter alia the local authorities, which is the parks board and so forth. So what happens is that we have already done research work in the past 3-4 years to identify how does the baboon get to damage the trees and what is the trigger thereof. Are they looking for food? Are they just doing it for fun and things like that? And research shows that there's no value that they are extracting when they do the work. So what we have identified is that nutritional value, sorry. There was no nutritional value. They were just playing with it and stripping and breaking it. So what we have done is we have investigated a lot of efforts, a lot of money paid as well, with baboon minders, people chasing it, controlling it, and so forth. At this stage, an agreement has been made that through the research, the identified groups, which has got, usually it's the young males in the group, which has been identified through research. The ones that are instigating the stripping and the destruction of the trees will then have to be caught in a process that has been fully agreed, and after capturing and catching them, we eliminate them. And that would have been through a means of getting rid of them.
Did you look at other options?
No, Chair, through you, we have done a lot. We have looked at relocation. There was no place to put them. The issue, Chair, is that the population thereof has increased substantially, and they have moved from the from the conservation areas where they were into the plantations because they were, I don't know what the trigger was. So we have decided, we have tried chasing them, we have tried many of them have tried lots of options, and this option that has been approved and through the industry working group, we are utilizing the method of trying to, we're still scaring them, still chasing them, but we are identifying those troops which have been scientifically identified that this is a damaging group. And then we capture them and we eliminate them.
Another question.
The Department of Environmental Affairs, where are they in on all of this? And, well, particularly the fact that you are.
We are including even NSPCA. As a matter of fact, we've got an industry open meeting where I think it's tomorrow, day after tomorrow, even people from Cape Town, there are greenie people from Cape Town that attend those meetings. So the manner in which we've done it scientifically, we've included the university as well to do proper research to justify a reason. Do we have to do the processes? The provinces, the Mpumalanga province is involved, nature conservation is involved, NCPS is involved, passport is involved. We also keep the records for it, we keep meetings for it. But obviously there will be a few greenies that will be anti the processes, but we're doing it scientifically so.
I'm just to follow up, what numbers are we talking per annum? Just to give the committee a feeling of the extent of your problem.
The numbers of the troops are. Each troop is ranging between anything between 13 and 85. So in the troop, what we do, we try by all means to do a proper research before you catch them. So you have to follow, get somebody to follow them, see exactly whether that troop is doing that damage, have a proper mechanism to trap them and start eliminating them. The numbers in terms of how much you do the elimination, I don't have it figured at hand as I speak, but if you look at the troop sizes, it could range between 13 to 35 in terms of the good troop size.
Another one. This thing can be sold to other countries. I know there's a province in the DRC where they actually eat them.
Okay. So the other question was on.
Before we leave it off, I still want just to know, Jefferson. Just a number. I know the size of the troops, but are you eliminating 1,000 per year? 500? Just give us a feeling of the extent.
The thing is, as I sit here, I don't have the exact number, but it never, even from when we started, it never even came to 500. Even the date we started, it never came to that 500 figure. But the thing is, because the process is so much interrogative, we have to first do the full research work, finish it in a year or so, do the other alternatives, consult with NCPSA, consult with the provincial government, local government, greenies, have lobbies and meetings, develop a protocol on how you're going to do that without harming them. And that protocol must be acceptable, everybody must, not without harming them, but without. Torturing. Do it in a manner that the animal is also not humanely. So I do not have the figure on the number, but it never came to any 500 figures. I think it could have been the total maybe about 200 or so. I don't know. I don't have the figures as yet.
Chair, can I just also add, the troops move along between the plantations, so it's not only our own plantation. So it's an industry-wide initiative. So the troops may not be eliminated on our plantation, but next door on our neighbours as well. So the numbers are a difficult one. It's not readily available. But it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem, and it's such a big problem that I'm aware that the Zimbabwean forestry operators decided not to do FSC certification anymore because of that, because they are eliminating them chemically, yes.
They're
poisoning.
A poison which was having an effect on the other animal that eats it. So,
No, that's fine. We acknowledge the problem, but I guess the way they are doing it, they have records, and they might not have them here. Maybe we could request the chairperson that they supply us. For example, just to say, in this year so many, in the other year so many.
No,
the
fair value adjustment and the
NADRO
reduction.
Jay, the fair value adjustment is based the numbers that we've shown. Let me now just get to the. The fair value adjustment is a paper exercise. It's an accounting entry, so it's not a cash flow one. But it does, the fair value adjustment per se, the 750 million that was positive in the previous year is cumulative. It's only for that year, so it's not a total valuation. The total valuation of that year of our growing stock was 3.2 billion rand. And then it reduced with the 342 million in the current financial year to 2.9 billion rand. So it's an accounting entry, it's not a cash flow entry. If you look at the details of the calculation, you will see that the physical part of it did increase. And perhaps that's just a part of the losses that we currently experience is directly a result of the 2007 fires. In July 2007, in a matter of a week, just over a week, I think it was 8 days, 17,500 hectares of our plantations were fire damaged. Now, just to put that in context, our normal harvest is around about 4,000 hectares. So it's more than 4 years of harvest and area that was damaged within 8 days. Now, what we've done since then is we've taken off all the fire damaged timber. We managed to sell most of it. There's still some of it in WEDEX. And during the downturn now in the economy, we redeployed our employees to plant it. So as we sit here today, the unplanted area, which is one of the areas that we are, our key performance areas that we are monitoring very closely from a board perspective, and from management perspective, is which areas do we harvest and not plant, because that will constitute asset stripping if you do not replant. We have replanted. The minimum standard of industry is 5%, that you may not have more than 5% unplanted areas. We have less than 3% currently. So we have replanted all of the fire damaged areas, and therefore that's mainly the reason for the increase, the physically increase of 207 million rand that you'll see in the fair value adjustment. In terms of the returns that we're expecting for the current year, we're expecting less negative returns. So the situation didn't worsen, it did improve, and we're managing it going forward. And as you could see also from the cash flow, the fact that there's only 35 million rand that we've spent for the first 6 months, it's already improving a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But just to ask, once you lost 404 million, did you ever make that, you know, did you ever get that back?
It's difficult. The short answer is you'll never get all of that back. But in terms of the assets that we're managing, a lot of it is if you protect it properly, the trees keep on growing. So some of it you will get back in years to come when you start harvesting and if you get back onto the production levels that we should be at, which is 1.45 to 1.5 million cubic meters of round logs per year. So some of it should come back here, but you will not get back all of the losses. Perhaps I should just combine it also with a forestry charter. The forestry charter has been gazetted and approved. And we've been monitored against that, evaluated, and the latest certificate was issued in July this year, where we were a level 3 contributor. So in terms of transformation, we're doing a lot as a company, and we're actually quite proud on our achievements. The specific schedule that is referred to was in terms of fixed-term contractors. Yes, it is in terms of fixed-term employees. It's not employees, full-time employees. That is on the previous page, where we do have... it's on page 27. So we must look at that when we look at the transformation and employment equity within the company. And yes, we're not where we want to be, especially at the senior levels. But we're working on a plan to see how we can improve that. It's also a historical fact that non-skilled and semi-skilled labour is mainly black and black males in our industry traditionally, but that we have a whole program. Leslie has just put on the certificate in terms of our score.
Yes, sir. Sir, my point is not about. Let me put it this way. The point I was raising largely to me relates to, I mean, the CEO has just considered that they are not where they would want to be. And I take that point. And it goes further to say they are working on a plan. And that's what my point is. I would want the committee to be afforded an opportunity to have a look at the plan. They may have the level 3 ratings and all of those, but from where I'm sitting as a politician, to me that's neither here nor there. I'm really not impressed, because by what I see on the annual report, to me leaves much to be desired. That's my point.
It's
basically on transformation, because see, for me, a state-owned enterprise, in a country where we have put transformation very high on a priority list, and then you look at the composition of the board, for example, I should have raised this earlier, and then from where I come from, it's not even an assumption, I think it is just there. There are trade unions that are operating in this sector, that there are trade unions, the workers there belong to trade unions, and yet you don't see trade union representation in the board. Maybe something that, maybe not even them, maybe the minister must tell us something about it. Where are we going? Where is the voice of the worker? I'm actually not surprised that they are where they are in terms of transformation.
Question regarding boundaries that refers to page 30 of the report. The issue was that table 2, which talks about the boundaries offered to communities, is not detailed enough to provide information relating to what field of study and so forth. I think we take comment on it. We've got the information. If it's really required, we can send it through. But we take a note for the publication of the next year's annual report to make sure that when we put in boundaries offers to adjacent communities and other non-employees, it should include what field of studies they have been allocated for. Thanks.
Provide us a quote related to the internal audit.
Chair, the two service providers listed as support to the internal audit are very specialized. The first one, TVK, is with regard to forensic investigation. So we don't have internal capacity wherever we require forensic work to be done. We subcontract to them. And this KPMG is looking at our ICT, information and communication technology part, where we also, it's not worth our while to employ experts on that, so we contract that out. All the rest of the internal audit is done through a full-time internal audit team.
Now, are they saying that they are retaining a company for forensic audit? Because, look, for me, my understanding is that forensic audit, we only do forensic audit if we suspect something or there is prima facie that something has been done. And it's only when we have discovered that we decide we'll go on a forensic audit and appoint a company. Are they saying they are retaining a company for forensic audit?
They are a service provider, but they are only appointed on a project-by-project basis and paid on a project-by-project basis.
When there's a need for.
When there's a need for. And the advantage is forestry, a lot of the investigations are often unique in terms of forestry operations, so it is to our benefit to have a company that specializes and also understand the business environment. So that's why we have a specific service provider to look at forensic work, especially in the forestry side.
I just want to understand. In other words, they are not retaining. I guess they understand the meaning of retain.
Yeah.
So in other words, in this financial year, there were cases where forensic audit was done.
In the year under review, there was work done forensically. But it's all very small, it was small issues. There's no major fraud cases. Yeah, that's a difficult one. I can't really comment on that. Forestry operations are traditionally damaging roads, there's no doubt about that, but there's also minimum standards for repairs that needs to be done to those roads that needs to be complied with, but I can't answer specifically on that answer.
I think the issue with RAMS is that we are minority shareholder. So it means the full management is not residing with its subcore. We just have a shareholding of about 16%, I can't remember, about 16%. So the operation itself is managed by the entity that is fully owning that. And we can be more responsible and account to more on the Kumatlin forest where we've got full operations and it's 100% owned by subcore.
Specifically, it will be the Ronces, Crystal John Ronces.
I will make sure that we get the contact, and also even because we cannot give full account of, we would have just notified them that there was some concerns raised regarding the road issues and the impact that it is having on tourism. But I will give you direct contact for the people at Ronces to talk to and allay the concerns.
We have one director still on the board, the representative from our company will make sure that it is addressed at that level, the concern.
Yes, sir. You wanted to follow up?
Not really, sir, but something springs to mind when talking about that.
Is it in line with the question that you
have? So. No, in fact, something springs to mind. I'm sorry for contaminating the meeting, but you should know Moses Komoi. He is part of the RAMS people. He bent beyond recognition on Sunday. He was involved in a car accident and he died. He was bent beyond recognition. It just brings to mind.
So he led the empowerment section of the transaction. He was the leader, he was instrumental to that.
Are there any further
questions now that need to address the overall charge around SAFCOM and the exit strategy, so the department and Okay, let me repeat that question. And the second last was land claim. So I'll ask Leslie and the department to tell us the progress and where we are on the land claim.
The land claims is a very involved and difficult process, if one can put it that way. We have tried various levels to try and unbundle the bottleneck. We, as a management team, also tried to meet with the commissioner, previous chief commissioner. We met through the Department of Public Enterprise. They've organized tripartite meetings with us and DEF and the commissioner's offices to try and resolve the situation. What we have done now on the SAFCO level, we have put up a project which is a land claims facilitation project. What we do there is we take all the land claims that are existing, we try and look at what stage the land claims is, and we facilitate the process in that we bring in the parties together and assist to unbundle the bottlenecks. It's just unfortunate some of the processes, when the claim is towards its final point, communities start fighting with each other, taking each other to court, and therefore further delaying the process. Some other processes are complicated by the issue of the vesting of the state forest land, the vesting of the land rights, where the land rights belongs to the Department of Public Works and it must be ceded. There's a lot of complication in the process. What we have successfully been managing to do was to move the stages of the land claims, more especially in the Mpumalanga area where they were very, very far back. We have been providing them with mapping technicalities, assisting them with GPSing, mapping their graveyards and other things, putting up the boundaries. But that is as far as we can go. We can provide assistance and facilitate the process. But the process itself is managed by the Land Claims Commissioner, which is within the Rural Development and Land Reform. And I must say that from the SAFCO point of view, the process itself is really cumbersome. It's really very difficult. But what we have undertaken to do, and we've got resources to do, is to try and assist in facilitating the fast tracking and the resolution of the land claims at this stage.
No, we don't really have anything further to add on the land claims side, but just to say that it is, we note that SAFCO's really assisting as far as they can the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. And we're engaging with Rural Development and Land Reform regularly to track progress. But the department, as I'm sure you are aware, is really severely constrained financially to settle claims. So not only is there a very bureaucratic process and slow process around first identifying communities, verifying communities, etc., and dealing with resolving land claims, but also very, very constrained financially. So I think we just have to bear that in mind. I think, I don't know, Leslie, are you finished on the land claims? I might as well continue, if that's okay.
I've been trying to work this out in my mind, and maybe it's just the quality of my mind, I don't know. I understand there is a challenge, they are saying, with land claims. But what I don't understand is the prejudice to SAFCO. In other words, as a company now, while this land has a pending case, what is it that they are unable to do? I want them to say to me, you see, because this land is a subject of a land claim, we can't do 1, 2, 3. I've not heard that.
Chair, through you, I think there's various things that really impact on the, precisely, yes, the management of the asset. Last year, we had a community that revolted, and they marched to our premises and properties, alleging that the land is theirs and the department is not converting it or giving them benefits of the land. That has impacted negatively because actually it even was on TV. They went in there wanting to stay there, not to go out. And they were threatening also the management on the area. It was in Vetcliffe towards the Mel Street. So there are various issues that happen that has an impact on us as a business if the claims are not settled and resolved.
It's mainly communities where they also the land claimants that become unhappy, and you also find that often that reflects in the number of fires that you have, and prevented fires and put out fires on our behalf because we have a good relationship with them. So negatively is the perception that we have a role to play in land claims not being settled,
mm-hmm.
but we try through the compact to negate that risk.
I'll ask the department now to take us through the whole strategy around self-call, whether it should exist or exit, and how we move forward. And also the minority shareholders, how we address that.
Thanks, Chair. Let me just start with the land claims, because it actually leads into a lot of the discussion around the future of the self-call. If we go back in time, to 2007, where government privatization agenda was placed on hold. This was primarily as a result of the land claims process. In essence, the feeling was you're not going to be attracting the private sector if you're dealing with majority of your operations being affected by land claims. So it really is, it's a systemic thing. It is a very big problem, but we are confident that we are working towards, government, working towards resolving land claims collectively. Now, the decision that was taken in 2007 was such that government would place the privatization and winding of KLF and the winding up of SAFCO on hold until such time as the land claims were resolved, and gave a 5-year window within which that would take place. So if we take that back to 2009, in effect, Minister Irwin requested a 5-year corporate plan that would look at how SAFCO could keep its operations going while the land claims were being addressed. In essence, the ethos behind that remains. We would like to see SAFCOL's commercial operations remain viable and strong. That is why we did request a turnaround plan this year, and it's a cornerstone of the Minister's strategic intent statement. We have also, now going back to the land claims question, it has resulted in a lot of uncertainty. There's no doubt about it. Again, in the strategic intent statement, the Minister made it very clear that he would like to bring certainty to SAFCOL and guidance around SAFCOL's future role. So we have collectively, as Rural Development and Land Reform, DPE and DAF and SAFCOL, together with National Treasury, looked at various options. This was still within the privatization context, because that 2007 decision remains in place. So in essence, the discussions really, and they speak to the policy agenda, the national policy agenda, looked at, this was post-privatization, winding up of SAFCOL, what would become of SAFCOL? And in essence, the discussion centered around converting SAFCOL into a developmental entity. Now, as we know, there's been a shift away from the privatization agenda, and we are currently tasked, our minister has tasked us with presenting him a series of options, precisely to bring clarity to the question. So really what we're looking at is, would you necessarily still have, what would be the most effective way for SAFCOL to perform, to play a role in a developmental state? And would that mean that you would still have to prioritize? We're currently conducting research. We're looking at SAFCOL's developmental reach, its developmental impact, We're also looking at institutionally, financially, technically, what requirements would be needed for SAFCOL to play such a developmental role. So we are tackling this question, and on our business plan, we are due to complete all of that by June 2011. Now, obviously, we're going to try and fast-track all of that because it's not helping. We need to bring clarity and closure to the situation. But we also need to be cognizant of the fact that the presidency is carrying out a review of state-owned enterprises. So that review panel is still conducting its work. We expect the report to be out by the end of Feb, but we're not, you know, obviously we don't exactly know when that will take place. So all of these factors will feed into a position, to government's position on the future of the FASCO. And I think it's just important to go back and acknowledge the fact that, you know, the land claims have played quite a pivotal role in placing the government's decision to place privatization on hold. But obviously within that time frame, the thinking was for SASCO to retain its commercial value and viability, not to erode shareholder value. But unfortunately, we have seen convergence of various factors that have led to quite severe financial standing. So our priority at this stage as shareholder is to ensure that SASCO retains its commercial viability, because without that, we don't believe that they can continue to play a meaningful developmental role. In its current form, anyway. So, yeah, I think I'd like to, without further ado, just ask my colleague Nkongweni if he'd like to add anything on that, and then also deal with the minority shareholding issue. And just before that, though, I'd like to just clarify on the Mozambican certification, forestry certification, stewardship certification. Just to point out that SASCO isn't required in Mozambique to be FSC certified. But they operate their forests as if they are. So I think that's just an important point to mention, that they really do try to balance economic, social, and environmental considerations in their operations, which is very important. Thanks.
excuse me. I will not. I think Caroline has covered enough with regard to the complications around the certainty surrounding the future of SAFCO. I would just need to add some clarification with regard to the disposal of the remaining minority shareholdings within the four privatized entities. These shares are earmarked for the empowerment of the communities surrounding those plantations within which those companies operate. The process it requires the identification of the extent of the intended beneficiary communities, as to what extent they expand, and those ones that is done, and then they go to form community trusts who are going to represent them within those entities in the shareholding and management of the shares within those four entities. The process is led and facilitated by the Department of Land Development and Land Reform in terms of identifying and assisting the communities in forming those community trusts. It is that has been a hold up. It is only when those community trusts would have been constituted that the remaining shares would therefore have to be transferred to the respective communities. The feedback that we get from the Department of Land Development is that there's been certain challenges in them in finalizing the clear determination of the extent of those communities intended to benefit from this, as well as the finalization of the constituting of the community trusts into which the shareholding can therefore be transferred. So those have been the challenges. Some of them relate to the land claims and the fighting between the communities themselves when they are supposed to constitute those community trusts, and also agreeing as to what extent to cut off which is the intended beneficiary community and all of that. So, but those are the challenges that the Department of Land Development is dealing with, and we're getting guidance from that. In the meantime, the Department of Public Enterprises, try to see whether there could be a facilitation of the process to a certain extent within the current complexities, in terms of which maybe there could be some kind of a warehousing trust that could be formed in the meantime, so that the shares can be transferred from Safcon into that warehousing trust, while the rural development project is underway to finalize the establishment of a community trust into which, therefore, the shares will be transferred. And a proposal in that regard was received from the National Empowerment Fund, and which the department therefore presented to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and DAF and National Treasury. What happened is that the Department of Rural Development and DAF came back to say they are not completely supportive of the warehousing trust being within the control of the National Empowerment Fund. They were not satisfied that there was clarity enough as to there was a misalignment between from the NEF perspective with regards to whether the shares while they're being warehoused under NEF would be on the balance sheet of the National Empowerment Fund or whether they would be housed somewhat separately. So as a result of that, in July this year, the Department of Rural Development decided to commission an investigation through an external law firm to investigate as to whether they, as a government department, can form that warehousing trust and also to seek advice into the optimal manner in terms of which the transfer of those shares can be effected and ensure the effective beneficiation of the internet communities. That is where the process is at this point in time. We have requested for that opinion and also an indication as to how the matter is going to be progressed forward with the Department of Rural Development. That's just where it stands at the moment. Thank you.
Okay. I think
yes, perhaps just one question that I would just like to respond on quickly that was asked with regard to the restructuring that was reported in 1999 and if we're still in the same position. The restructuring that was referred to in that year was with regard to the privatization. They didn't call it privatization, they called it restructuring, and that was where the company was split. We used to be Safcol, all the operations in Safcol were then split into the five subsidiaries. So it's a different restructuring challenge that was addressed in that year than it's currently being addressed. It was very much similar, it was related because the restructuring and the downstream processing that was mentioned was, the question was asked, should the forest be sold separate from the sawmills or should it be in one, should the company be allowed, if I remember correct, this is now 11, 12 years ago, allowed to do downstream processing because the industry was opposed to it, and how the whole rationalization of the split up of the company take place in terms of overhead structure, what would be the impact on employment and things and all of that. So it was very much all related to restructuring. And then the other issue that was mentioned was the import-export. We had an overproduction of saw logs those years, which we then wanted to export, but due to the fact that, and I didn't mention it, we harvest softwood saw logs 30 years after we planted it. So if you harvest and export, it's not something that you can overnight catch up again if you need it within South Africa, extra capacity or additional softwood saw logs. So there was an argument at that stage to should the company be allowed to export logs.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this is the essence of the whole discussion, that the Chairperson of the Board started the discussion on the business in trouble. Three years ago, this decision was taken by the department or executive, and I think it's just more complicated now, because in the meantime, in the past 3 years, you, for the first year under review, you made a loss. there's huge implications. Your total workforce is over 2,000 people. I mean, it's uncertainty being brought to employees. Financial problems are coming in. I agree with the department that it should be fast track. If you say to us, June 2011 is a deadline, but also the presidential review on the certain entities must kick in some way, Chairperson, I would rather recommend that the committee, after this session is closed, early in the new 2011 first term, request a meeting with the Ministry of Public Enterprises and just discuss this issue. Where are we? How can we help and assist to fast-track the system so there's certainty for SAFCOL, for the employees, for the financial trouble that you are in, and that we can just get the sense that the commercial viability of SAFCOL. By extending this and to see in the next 2 years we will not come to a decision. If we come here next year again with your annual report and we have the same problem, we have not succeeded in making progress. So I suggest that we engage the Minister of Public Enterprises. It's a crucial issue. It's a long-standing issue. It's a sword hanging over your heads. And the circumstances in the last 12 months under the year under review, and you've indicated the last 6 months because we're halfway through the new year, have not improved. So I think it's crucial that the portfolio committee engage with the ministry and the department and to see how do we take this process forward and fast forward it to make a final decision, to bring certainty, not only to the people in front of us, but to the whole of SAFCOL. There are 2,000 people working there.
I'm just wondering, in view of the discussion that's actually taken place here, whether perhaps that shouldn't be also with the department, the ministry and Department of Rural Development, so that, you know, we get and land reform, so that we get a holistic way forward here, and not, you know, bits and pieces. And I think that's the danger of this thing, because policy and that is made elsewhere, it's not made here, and it might be useful for all of us, and I agree, I support that idea, but I think maybe it should be a joint...
And then you also have the question of the
Thank you again, Chair. Yes, certainly, land also should be part of this conversation. But I wanted to suggest further, Chair, in support of the two proposals, I think it's one proposal, that I think that the committee should probably independently also do their own further homework on what we would want to propose. Too, because I hear what the DPE is saying, and it's the land claims is stopping the privatization. It can't be a policy that. And I think that we should probably assist in. You know, our objective that we want is, first of all, we want poverty to end in this country. Does forestry and SAFCOL have a role in it? The answer is not no, it's yes. We would want more qualitative jobs to be created. Do they have the capacity and can they? We want more houses in this country, and we require wood to do this thing. We want more communication in this country, and we want more poles to go up the firewood. And so you can go on the long list. We want the health situation in the forestry sector also to be taken care of. We want women to be, you know, the list can just go on. So I think if we are not together on those issues, then just waiting for the land to come and go, and then thereafter, is not going to help. If we are able to answer those developmental questions, then we should be able to put together a strong case for what we see as the way forward. I am extremely perturbed about the fact that our logs are just leaving in mass out of this country to China. And then, what do we get back? We get back expensive books. Everyone is fighting for VAT on books and so on. But you can fight for VAT, but you've got to chase the entire chain of things which is causing some of these difficulties. So, Chair, I would suggest that the committee also do their own independent work in putting together a comprehensive one, but I think we should equally also see it our task to do oversight, to and appraise ourselves of the situation there and see if that also can assist us in putting together a case. There is a case already on why state-owned enterprises should be developmental in its nature in supporting this government that is still transforming, and why. But we also need confidence from the role players around this room. If they don't give us confidence, you know, and they throw their hands up in the air and say, look, we're just little and look, no one is there, then that also doesn't help us. I think we still feel strong and passionate about a particular direction, but if they don't feel the same as us, then... I'm not saying you are, I'm asking.
Just to add, in September we've been invited, September this year, we were invited to address the Portfolio Committee on Agricultural, Forestry and Fisheries. The debate was very much similar, and they did express the wish to also interact with this committee on the same subject. But just to add that they said that there's alignment necessary between the two committees. But we are passionate about the business as my board and the management team, and we believe that there is a very positive contribution that we can play in the economy and in the developmental state.
Plan, the strategy that I think you'll be finalizing in September. Did you say that? Yeah. I think at the end of the day, because it would be quite helpful from the suggestion that Honorable September put forward, that we also look at what it is that we can do. But I think we should, you know, assist even in that strategy. So, yeah. So I think but we will have to meet with all these other role players in other departments, so that we come up with our own view on how to strengthen, of course, the skilling. So I think we will discuss how we will take our process forward as a committee. Then if there's anything else from the side, members, you'll be the last now.
I actually just want to do something else.
Yes.
It's okay.
But it's in line with what we're talking about.
Yes. Obviously, the job creation and everything is of paramount importance. I just want to understand, really a clarity thing that I'm asking, these clusters that you set up, and I know how easy it is for communities to get into wrangles and conflict, and you actually did answer me, because they're made up of traditional leaders and the whole lot. Can I just understand, and then you know these are the contracts that you've already, the six that you've already set up. How practically
does that work? Do you then work with this forum and SAFCOL, and you know, what is the reality? You know, the practical side of that. I just want to understand how that actually works.
On that issue that I asked earlier on the forensic audit, that there was something under during this the year under review. Maybe I missed it. Is there something in this report where that is disclosed?
Can we start with that question? No, it was small. Specifically, it was a plantation manager servicing his son's vehicle through company service provider. So it's small. It's not something that would concern it. It's just something that was resolved with that and resolved when the employee was dismissed. Through a joint committee forums that is set up, so it's formal structured, where all the interested parties are represented, and then formal meetings are held where these issues are discussed.
No, Mr. Chair, I just want to say, I mean, with SAFCOL, but this is our last meeting, and I, from our side, would just want to say, you know, I enjoyed this year very much, and have a good Christmas and a new year, and come back safely, all of you.
We share the sentiment. We wish all honourable members a happy festive season, all our entities, the department. Let's come back alive, all of us.
I think before we leave this room, I think department and SAFCOL will be released, but members, if you could just stay behind before. I haven't closed the meeting yet. let me thank everybody for this meeting. It was my first meeting and it made it very easy. I just want to say that you won't have any need to pray next. because we're going to try to do things a bit differently. So that we don't have the need for any prayer. Pray at home, it will be for your health and, you know, success and other things. We pray in the national assembly, not here. So here we're not going to fight. And that means even no fighting between members and entities or the department or the party. We're here to try and work together, support one another, but of course to criticize one another where it's necessary, but in a very positive way. This brings us to the end of this. Let me also wish you all a Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. The meeting is adjourned, but if members could please stay behind us for a few minutes. And those of you who will be traveling, travel safe.